I really enjoyed the book. It's a remarkable book. I've looked through it twice now and read it, and it's one of these hypnotic books. You just keep looking at it and looking at it, and I've noticed that every time that you see a photograph, you see new things in it. If you sit, I don't know if you've had this experience, but I have. You can sit and ponder a photograph and look at it, and when you go back to it, you'll find something else in that photograph, and then something else, and all of these puzzles come together and become very clear. Especially when you're dealing with panoramic photographs like that, your mind kind of fills in blanks, but not all the details. I don't know if that's happened to you, but that's why photographs to me are so interesting, because you never get tired of them. You can go back and find something new in each one that you see. Why don't you tell me a little bit about the inception of this book and how the idea for it came about?
Well, our primary intention was to avoid the stereotype that has been, after all, so rampant in most books about Israel ever since Exodus made the transition from book to movie with all of its two-dimensional characters fully intact. We tried to do a book that pictures Israel not on a holiday, not on a holy day, but on an ordinary day. And we tried to the emphasis was on people. The people are not the usual ones that you see in picture books on Israel. You won't see rabbis, monks, and Muslim qadis happily walking down the road together. You see in that book Muslim qadis and Jewish rabbis, but they walk separately. And we felt that this was a truer reflection of the country than the cliché view. There are lots of tired people there.
Well, it should be noted that when you set out to do this photographic picture book of Israel, you selected, as you mentioned, a day. What day was that?
It was in May of 1984. We gave ourselves 24 hours, and and 60 of the very best Israeli photographers, some of them foreign correspondents, fanned out in the country. From the north to the south, some of them were with the army, and the other ones went to kibbutzim, and the others stayed in the large cities. Again, in each case, the emphasis was on people and on avoidance of stereotype. And the consequence, when I look at the pictures, the consequence is that I sometimes have the feeling that this is a kind of an intimate family album. And therein lies its charm, I think, and also its inner truth.
So there were, if I have this correct now, there were 60 photographers taking photographs in a single day.
That's
60
right.
Photographers.
60 photographers. Each one, they did not get specific assignments. They could do what they wanted. Each had 24 hours. But they dispersed themselves in different parts of the country. The result was a mass of pictures. I think in the final stage we had something like 50,000 frames, from which we selected the 300-odd pictures in this book.
And what was your criteria? The fact that you were dealing with people, primarily?
Again, the important thing was the first consideration was authenticity and avoidance of cliché. The second consideration was the search for high-grade photography. And I think we've more or less succeeded in this search. I mean, the photography is on a relatively very high level. And
One of the things that I noticed, the contradictions, the juxtaposition of soldiers with guns, and armored vehicles with machine guns, followed by ordinary people walking down a street, at the beach, at a...
Well, you see, a rifle in Israel is almost a personal piece of equipment, like a watch or sunglasses. It's that kind of a country, unfortunately.
I've noticed that. In a lot of the other pictures, you'll see there would be a man on the way to work, and on his back is a rifle.
That's right.
This leads me to wonder about people's point of view in Israel. I mean, I can't imagine in America going to work armed with a rifle. We, in spite of the largeness and diversity of America and its potential violence, it's also very humdrum. What is it like for the average Israeli to know that there is this imminent danger all around that leads to having to carry a firearm in this way?
Life is very tough in Israel. It's a country where you serve in the army for almost 35 years. You serve your first 3 years of national service, and then you remain in the reserves. And you're likely to be called up for up to two or three months in the year. This doesn't happen always, but there are years when especially youngsters that serve in special units are called up for 3 months in the year after they have served their normal national service of 3 years. So life is above all tough, but on the other hand, there's a sense of purpose that compensates for some of the hardships of life there.
I've noticed that one thing that strikes me is that the news out of Israel is out of all proportion to its size. Here's a tiny country. I think you mentioned how many people there are. I can't remember how many.
Four million.
4 million people in Israel. Small country in the desert, and yet the world's headlines are filled with news about Israel and the things that go on. Why do you suppose this is? Why do you suppose Israel has so much influence in the much more influence in the world that its size would indicate?
It's true, when you look at the New York papers, you sometimes think that Israeli news are local news. This has to do with the composition of New York, the ethnic composition of New York, but that is not the only explanation. Again, I said we have the misfortune of being in the news not because of our own doing. Israel, unfortunately, has been in a state of war in the past 35 years, and the end is not yet in sight. Again, if I may digress for a minute and say that the cliché, the stereotype concept of Israel is a country that has made the desert flourish, the desert flower. But that was no miracle. It was done. This you do with money. You did this in America. You did this in the West, in Nevada, and so forth. The true miracle of Israel is that 35 years of war, 35 years of endless military emergencies, 35 years during which the military consideration has been paramount above all others, and yet, despite all this, it has remained a free country. You would have expected the opposite to happen. You would have expected in a country where the military prerogative was the most important one, and for such a long period, that such a country would develop a military dictatorship, but this has not happened. It has remained a very noisy and at times violent democracy, and this, I think, is the true miracle of Israel.
To go on to a different topic, do you, when you wrote the introduction and some of the descriptive passages in the book, do you write in English or in Hebrew?
I write in both languages.
Which did you employ for this book?
Oh, this book has appeared only in English, so this I wrote in English, but most of my books I've done in both languages.
So you're equally at home.
Well, I'm married to an American girl, and that helps.
Uh-huh. Are you a native?
I mean, yes,
have you all, were you born in Israel? Tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, I started my career as a newspaper man, and for some years I was a local reporter, and then a couple of years later, I became Washington correspondent of the major Israeli newspaper, Haaretz. That's where I met my wife. And when we came back to Israel after my stint in Washington, which lasted about 6 years, I became a columnist and editorial writer, and started writing these books of mine that deal with the history of Israel and its tragic conditions, and the Arab-Israel War.
You've been writing fiction.
I've also written a novel. But mostly I've been writing about Israeli history and about the Arab-Israel conflict.
Well, it's clear to me that Israelis, or at least the ones that I have met, feel passionately about their country. And I guess this is something that all Israelis share, isn't it? Is that perception correct?
They're altogether too passionate people. If they weren't so passionate, it would have been an easier country to live in.
Do you run across my friend Amazaz?
Yes, of course. He's a very good friend of mine.
Is he?
He's a great writer.
He is a very fine writer, and he has been here to talk to me a couple of times, and I think he schedules it about every other year or so. I see him. I was delighted to know that he's given up smoking. He used to be a heavy, heavy chain smoking, and his wife kept berating him to stop, and now he has stopped, and that's good. Do you share political views with Amazaz?
I would say we're more or less on the same wavelength.
He described himself as a peacenik.
Well, yes, well, we're peaceniks in this sense that we think that it is possible today with perseverance and with a measure of, with a readiness for compromise to make peace between Israel and some of the Arab countries, and that we shouldn't miss this opportunity.
Well, I hope you're right. Some of the Arab countries seem to have acted so irrationally, and they also they don't think in unison. Egypt is certainly a case in point. If there is an attempt by some of the Arab countries or parts of those countries to make peace with Israel, the others seem to gang up on them, and it's just it's a nightmare. I noticed there was another suicide bomb attack in Beirut today, and 4 people were killed. And I know that I think you stated in your book that you had misgivings about the invasion of Lebanon, and yet just what goes on there is so incredible that you wonder if you can ever tame that country.
Well, I had misgivings about the Lebanese war because I thought that it was none of our business to set the Lebanese right when they were wrong. That's their problem, and I would hate for Israel to become the policeman of the Middle East. In retrospect, I think it is also clear that that was a totally futile war. It solved none of Israel's problems and only acerbated those of Lebanon.
Didn't help ours either. I mean, the U.S. tried to go in as a police force, and that didn't work. And we had to get out. And so I don't know. I think you're probably right there. Let them try to handle themselves. But do you know of anyone who could build a big high fence to go around the Lebanon?
I hope it should not be necessary. As I said, I think the daily news make it clear that the Arabs too are tired of this war and that they want to put an end to it. And the breakthrough with Egypt has been a real turning point because when Sadat came to Jerusalem, he broke the taboo, and after Sadat's visit to Jerusalem and the conclusion of peace between Israel and Egypt, the Arab-Israel conflict stopped being what it had been for so many years, an almost transcendental clash between irreconcilable forces. It became what many conflicts in the world are or have been, an argument over real estate. This, I think, can be resolved through compromise and moderation on both sides.
Well, when you get back to Israel, be sure to say to Amazaz hi for Don Swain.
Certainly will.
Appreciate that. And certainly a gorgeous book, and one that I know Americans, whether they are Jewish or not, will enjoy reading. I want to make sure I'm pronouncing your name correctly. It's Ilan.
That's right.
Amos Ilan.
Right.
Well, Amos Ilan, thank you very much for coming in and talking to me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.